Welcome to Teamwork, A Better Way, the podcast filled with stories, experiences, and insights from leading high-performing team experts. Here are your hosts, Spencer Horn and Christian Napier.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Teamwork, A Better Way. I'm Christian Napier, joined by my incredible co-host. He's an amazing, amazing man, Spencer Horn. Spencer, how are you doing?
Blushing. Thank you, Christian. Good to be with you. Love to be with you on a Monday morning to start off our week.
Yeah, and can you think of a better way to start our week than with our next guest?
I'm so excited. I just met her. I know you know her from before. I'm so excited about our topic today.
All right. Well, I'll get to the topic in a second, but let me just focus on the guest here. So Nina Johnson's joining us. She's a veteran of more than 20 years in CPG, consumer packaged goods industry. A lot of that with Coca-Cola. She's held a number of positions, 15 years leading, coaching, mentoring teams, which is why she's here with us today, Spencer.
Right.
Most recently, she served as the vice president of commercial channel strategy and planning for one of the United States'
largest. We just make up our plurals however we want to, right, Christian?
That's right. So she's got a
possessives, mindset,
but she can also see holistically, big picture and small picture at the same time. So she's very gifted in that regard. She was responsible for developing the go-to-market strategy for the entire Coca-Cola portfolio across all channels of trade for the Midwest and the West region here in the United States.
Wow.
And she holds an MBA from Kennesaw State University and dual bachelor's degrees, one in business administration and one in finance from DePaul University. So Nina, we are honored to have you on our podcast and welcome. And Roseanne Bateman already said hi from Columbus, Indiana. So she's joining us.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me, Christian, Spencer. I'm so excited to do this podcast and really excited to be a guest on Teamwork, A Better Way. I'm excited about this topic, actually. I think it's so relevant in today's culture and where we are today in our time period.
Well, let's get into what that topic is, right? You suggested this topic because of what you're seeing out there, and it's really about managing multi-generational teams. I love this concept. We've not really discussed this in detail before. And in the notes that you sent us beforehand, Nina, you brought to forth an interesting statistics under the caption of the readiness gap. And that statistic was 70% of organizations, executives believe that the ability to manage multi-generational teams effectively is important to the success of their organization, but only 10% actually feel like they're ready for this. So we're all yours, Nina. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about your background and how you came up with this idea and this focus on multi-generational teams?
Yeah, great question. So as I mentioned, you know, I started managing my first team. I was very young in my career. So mid-20s managing, you know, my first set of teams where everybody was older than me. And that probably existed up until I was in my mid-30s. And then I started managing teams that were older than me, younger than me, same age. And that's kind of continued. And as I thought about really all the different generations that I've managed, it's been interesting. There's no leadership discussions or trainings on multi-generations. If you think about a typical learning management system, there's tons of trainings on, you know, learning development, coaching, communication broadly, but not necessarily focused on the multi-generation. So all of my kind of experience and insights has really just been firsthand experience. You know, you kind of live and learn. You know, I wasn't the best, depending on which life stage I was in or what age group that I was managing. It was a learning experience. So I would say, you know, it's been, you know, when I was younger in my career, I probably did not do a great job managing, you know, what I would call like the baby boomers and like other millennials and older generations. And then as I kind of got sent into that age group, then I started to understand a little bit more different work styles. So I think that's why that statistics is so important, why organizations should really think of how can they better provide their management and their leaders specific multi-generational coaching, because it's a true fact today. They said over five generations are in the workforce today. And then the first time it's happened, because you've got baby boomers and really the traditionalists that are working longer than they have before, right? You know, the retirement age is no longer 59 or 60. You have people that are, you know, close to 70 still in the work age, and all the way till what we would call like a Gen Z, 21-year-olds entering the workplace. So think about what that means. You've got 21-year-olds all the way to, you know, close to 70-year-olds working in the same workplace on teams, whether that's management style, teamwork environment. So it's really important that we know how to communicate, lead, and coach these generations.
You know, I know that that experience that you've had speaks to me, and it's probably not unique to a lot of people out there in the workforce that are high performers that are having opportunities to lead teams. You're going to have teams of all ages. I mean, I graduated with my master's in 26, and I was immediately put into a director role of operations. I had teenagers and 60-year-olds. So back, I mean, greatest generation, I think you call them traditionalists. I'd love for you to outline the different generations and a little bit about them. But I remember my having to fire somebody that was 60 and I was 26 years old. It was so stressful. I mean, I was so anxious. I'm like, why, you know, here's this kid that has to manage people that have so much more experience. It was stressful for me, even though I was in a position of authority. And you're so right. I mean, I love that as you gain experience, it becomes more natural, but it seems like we have to learn that by experience instead of someone saying, here's a handbook on how you deal with that. So I'd like the handbook now that I'm, you know, 35 years later. Wished I would have had it, but hopefully you're going to give that. So a couple things. I mean, talk about, it's a fact right now. We have multi-generations in the workforce. What are the pros and cons? Tell us a little bit about those generations and just go from there for a moment.
Yeah, and I'm going to read the generations and the dates because I don't want to get the dates mixed up. But we have what we would call the silent generation or traditionalists, and they were folks born between 1928 to 1945. Then we've got the baby boomers, which all of us are really familiar with, 1946 to 1964. That's like my parents are in that baby boomer generation. Generation X is born 1965 to 80. Then we've got millennials, or they're called Gen Y. I'm in that bucket. I'm on the cusp. Sometimes I think I'm really a Gen X, which is born.
So that's interesting. So you're kind of a tweener too. So I'm a tweener. I'm January of 65. So I'm a tween between that baby boomer and Gen X. But I think there's some nuance there too, isn't there?
There is, and I'll kind of talk through that. And so millennials are born 81 to 96, and then the Gen Zs are like the newest generation, born 1997 to 2012. So, you know, depending on what source, it could be off by year. But yeah, I'm on the cusp. So when I hear the traditional things about a millennial, the stereotypes, I often like, I'm not like that. Like, I'm not a typical millennial. Like, I think of that someone 10 years my age group, just because I'm really on that cusp. But that's one of the things, is the stereotypes that we have to think about is, you know, as a leader or any team member, when you're working with someone in a different age group, is not to actually default to the stereotypes, because we do that so often. And I find myself, you know, doing that as well. So that's why we kind of think through is how do we best, you know, understand and communicate. And one of the best things that I've learned is really just individual motivations of these general groups. And I'll talk at a very high level, you know, we're talking about motivations, but when you think about the baby boomers and traditionalists, these are groups that have been probably at the same job for many, many years, right? They started there probably in their 20s and have worked their way up the traditional, very traditional ladder career. And their focus is on job stability and, you know, providing for the family. then you have like the Gen X millennials coming in that probably do more job hop. And I was reading a stat and they said typically like a Gen Y, Gen Z, they're only in jobs less than 3 years. So even when I look at resumes, you know, mine is 18 years within the Coke system, and I will get resumes from Gen Z and Gen Y, and they've already had like 5 or 6 different companies.
Yeah, I think 3 years is generous, Nina.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, some of it is it's 2 years. And, you know, when I typically ask, you know, kind of walk me through your career progression, it's really not surprising, but how often they say, I was promoted to this next role. And when they hit a mark of not being promoted in that 24 months, that's when they typically look for a different job, which is very different than a millennial baby boomer that, you know, maybe is working in the same role 5 to 8 years, kind of waiting for that next step. So the motivations and why people work in the different groups is very different. And then the last thing I'll say is just kind of the aspiration, or I talked a little bit about the motivation is, you know, today, like Gen Z, Gen Y, millennials, they're looking at work-life balance. How do they, you know, be able to have that hybrid work schedule? And, you know, like you mentioned, post-pandemic, like working remote is a key benefit where, you know, if you ask my parents, they went into the office every day. There was no such thing as working from home and, you know, doing this hybrid work schedule, and there weren't any perk benefits. This was your job. So the motivation of what people are looking for, very different today.
We have several comments. I'd love to throw some up, and I have so many myself. So here's, I don't know if you saw Stacy was saying Xennials, approximately late 70s to 83, 84. And then you've got Joseph Saucedo here. Let me add his comment here. Nina, appreciate your suggestion about not defaulting to stereotypes. And there is some difference. I think there's also a lot of similarity. I mean, we all want to have happiness. We want to have good relationships. We want our life to matter. And it seems like the younger generations express it differently than the older, right? I mean, they were more willing to just do whatever was expected. Today, the kids, I call them kids. I mean, sorry, Nina, you're a kid, but the kids, they want to know what they do matters. I don't care if they're pouring concrete driveways. They want to know how that makes the world a better place, and they want to live. They don't want to work, you know, live to work. They want to work to live. And so they want to have meaning, and they want to be able to have experiences and learn and grow and know that you care about them. That's one of the reasons why diversity and inclusion is so important, because they care about how you actually treat people. And so those are some big differences that I've experienced, but we really want a lot of the same things, but we manifest them a little bit differently is my experience.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think the feedback and communication with the younger generation has to be more frequent and more encouraging, like great work, so-and-so. And like, it has to be more.
Hold on. Are you saying they need a gold star for turning in their work on time?
Coming to the office and
completing the great job coming into the office today. Come on.
There is a lot more encouragement, and it's very true. And you need to make sure you acknowledge them and provide that feedback. And it's not even just that, but it's also like the training and the skills compared to, as I think about managing the older generations that I have, it was probably not as frequent now that I'm looking back. But it's kind of part of that communication process and feedback, right? They need to know that the work that they're doing is valued.
So this is Laura says, young people today have strong views that older people should be retired earlier and don't want to work with or hire older people, or will do the things that get older people terminated. Do you believe that, or do you agree with that?
I don't think the intention of most people is to get older people fired, but I do think that young people probably have a stereotype or bias of older people, and probably vice versa. Absolutely, right? You know, I'm looking back, so I'm in my early 40s, and you know, if I look at the younger generation, I'm like, we have so much experience, right? Just to pardon and give you wisdom, but likewise, they're probably thinking the same thing as me now, right? Like, look at this really old mom working, you know, still in the workforce. So I think it goes both ways. I think that's where we have to be really careful and not assume the stereotypes and, you know, hope that working together, the collaboration really brings greater success in all of us.
That was a zinger, right?
Salute me. Okay, so my two cents on this thought, and then back over to you, Nina, is when we hear those kinds of sentiments, it's time to do a bit of root cause analysis, right? Sometimes I see it myself, where as an older person now, I'm Gen X, but not by much over the boomers, you know. So I'm Gen, but it's kind of the stereotype that, oh, here's the old person who's trying to impart their sage wisdom to me, when this person's wisdom is old, like it's not relevant to what we're going through today. And so, and at the same time as the old person, I'm just trying to be helpful, right? So I think I'm trying to be helpful, but my help is being rejected because, you know, somebody who's in this different generation may not think it's relevant, because what I'm sharing with them in their eyes may not be current. You know, it may not be reflecting their current reality. And so sometimes it's just people have these good intentions, but we're kind of getting in our own way, you know, because as the older generation is trying to pay it forward, you know, we hear this term pay it forward. Well, I'm trying to pay it forward, and these people don't want to pay any attention to what I have to say, and they don't want to pay any attention because they don't think what I have to say is relevant.
That's true. And I think, you know, it's really important from a culture standpoint that the leader or your manager helps create that, like, a really inclusive culture where collaboration, that open dialogue, is valued across all the different perspectives, because I think you need someone to help facilitate that if it doesn't come naturally. Because you're right. I mean, we feel like that we have our own biases. That's why the culture needs to be created where that diverse thought is important, because you have experiences that I may pitch an idea that you're like, we've tried that, it didn't work, but here's why. And then maybe I'll come in with, well, maybe we could try to tweak it and do X, Y, Z. But you have the experience, knowledge that there's no way that, you know, somebody new coming into the workforce would know. And we have to create that culture of inclusivity.
Nina, I love that collaboration idea. And I can't remember who it was. He wrote a book on, he's a hospitality guru out of San Francisco. And I mean, he's now close to his 60s, but he talks about this idea of truly collaborating with the younger generations, because they have so much insight and experience in how things are working today. But there's still things that they don't miss. I mean, they don't see that they miss, to your point, Christian. And what's magical is if you can mesh those two together and they both appreciate each other, it creates incredible outcomes, because once we start to appreciate the insights of the younger generations, teach me. And here's what I have. And you give the permission then to stop, to release some of those biases and say, well, maybe I can learn something, because we with more experience may say, you know, I know it all. And that's a danger too, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, there's this new mentoring, you know, traditional mentoring is, you know, an older person mentor someone younger. Now they have this thing called like reverse age mentoring, where
that's it. That's it. And this senior executive is embracing that and setting the example, setting the culture that you're talking about. Teach me, young people. I'll be your Padawan.
Yeah. And it could be, you know, it could be a specific skill set, like even some of the social media platforms. I'll be honest. Every time I see them, like, there's three more icons. I don't even know what they are. Right. But that's part of the reverse age mentoring.
Welcome to getting old, Nina.
I know. It can flow both ways. And I love that, because I remember when I first started in my 20s, there was no such thing as reverse age mentoring. It was just all traditional mentoring. And now we have it go both ways. Like, there's an opportunity on the team to do that. Like, I'll help facilitate, you know, reverse age as well as traditional mentoring.
We're getting a lot of comments. So thanks, Joseph. And here's Stacy again. Generations can learn from each other, but we all have to be open. That's exactly what we're talking about. Exactly agree with the fostering the culture that helps with that. And I got one more, Christian, before we go on. Oh, I got, geez, three more. Good grade.
Yeah, there's a lot. They're pouring in.
So here's Roseanne Bateman in the Midwest. So good to hear from you, Roseanne. Collaboration and open communication is critical. Yes, and that has to be done on purpose. Joseph, again, I haven't read this. Let's put it, what does he say? True on meeting folks where they are and approaching collaboration. Well, I think this is my daughter, is actually, she's the young, and she's in the workforce as a nurse. The younger generation wants fewer displays of authority and more compassion in the workplace. What would you say to that?
I would agree with that assessment. I think that compassion is that empathy, checking in, the work-life balance, right? Today, when we engage with our younger generation, I probably know like what their activities are, what they're doing, their hobbies, coming in Monday and asking them what they did on the weekends. Like, it's part of understanding the whole self, not just the professional piece, but also your personal piece. And I think that's how you show compassion and build that trust with the younger generation.
Thanks, sweetie, for joining the show today. If you're not my sweetie, then I'm sorry, but I think you are. I don't know if we've ever had this many comments in one right at the beginning of the show. At CPG, especially our younger team members, can be our target audience, and we have built consultants and focus groups. I love that. And then here's one more that we've got from Laura. The youngest workers, 30-year-old men, refer to co-workers, "You're not my dad," or "You're not my mom." Yeah. When there is not a respected hierarchy within a company, when young men feel they have swayed someone that has an ability to promote them, this is more prevalent. I'm not sure I understand all of what's being said there. Does that? Maybe you can translate.
Let's see. I am not sure exactly either. Maybe Laura, if you could rephrase that. I will mention, I think one pro when we talked about multi-generations, just because she mentioned family, is this concept of when you have multi-generations working on a team, it's considered more of a family unit. Because if you think about your family, there's older brothers, younger sisters, your parents, your mom, dad, and uncle. And think about all the different things you learn versus if you were in a team that was literally the same age group, you don't have that family unit. It's essentially a friend group, right? If everybody in their 20s are working in the same department, then you guys are hitting happy hour. It's the same activities, same hobbies. So it's a friend learning environment versus a family unit and learning environment. So I think there's that pro of that family and that multi-age, because you learn so many things, both I'll say professionally and personally. I know like I've learned tons from my older colleagues on both professional, but even personal stuff, right? If they have kids older than mine, then I just, get tidbits on what to look forward to when your kids are in high school or attending college. So I think you have that broader sense of learning when you work with multi-generations beyond the workplace.
So I've got a question for you, Nina. You mentioned at the beginning of our conversation that when you were younger, in your 20s, you started managing teams, you were leading teams. As you look back, you think to yourself, well, maybe I didn't do some things very well. Maybe I made some mistakes, but you corrected, you made adjustments. And so I'm curious to know a little bit more about that. What were some of the things that you saw your younger self doing that you felt like, oh, I need to make some adjustments here. I need to handle some situations or manage this team or manage my teams a little bit differently moving forward. So kind of walk us through that process of what you thought you were doing when you were younger that you needed to change as you became a more seasoned leader.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely made mistakes. So when I first started managing my teams, I had essentially got promoted. I think Spencer mentioned, I was a really high individual contributor. And so I got promoted, did not have previous leadership skills. And one of the biggest things that I look back and I really regret doing was time management or time commitment. So when you're in your 20s, you're not married, no kids. I was essentially a workaholic, meaning I was in the office at 8. I was working way into the lights, late into the night. And I'd be one of those bosses that would be emailing my team, during dinner, in the evenings, late at night, asking them questions just because I didn't understand the concept of people have commitments outside of work, right? That's not something that naturally happens until you get a little bit older. So as I look now, you know, I'm in my 40s, as I mentioned, but now I have three young children. So once I started having kids and a family, I realized, wow, people cannot get to the work at 8 o'clock. It's actually like almost impossible if you have kid drop off and you have to get to school. Same with pickup and activities. So when I was younger, I did not realize at times why the older team members had to leave work at a certain time by like 4 or could not communicate, you know, between the hours of like 6 to 8. It's these simple things that I think it's life experiences that it's hard to cheat someone when you're younger. You can explain it, but unless you go through that life phase, it's really hard. So even now as I manage my teams, and this experience has taken me beyond whether or not you have a family, but now I'm very conscious of time commitment. So whether or not you have children or not, I'm very clear, like, you know, we try not to do any emails post this time. If I do send an email, please do not feel the need to respond, you know, until the next day. It's just some people are a little bit of night owls, but it's the time commitment and the time appreciation for your team that is probably the most valuable thing to me now, knowing how hectic our lives could be and that we have to respect everyone's personal time.
Great, great answer. And we do have a response back from Laura, but I'll hold on that for a minute. Laura, stay tuned. We'll get to your comment in a moment. But one of the things that you said a minute ago is that the younger generations need and expect more communication. And you actually just gave an example of some of that communication within your organization, like you don't have to respond to my emails. So can you elaborate on communication and collaboration? How do the communication styles vary across the different generations? And then how can we as leaders adapt to those differences? And maybe, you know, what strategies can be employed to foster effective collaboration and teamwork? And if you have some specific examples, that would be, I think, super helpful to us and our listeners.
Yeah, great question. I think today's workforce, I think just in the digital age today, so kind of even beyond the multi-generations, like we have so much digital communication. I would tell you that I probably would text with my coworkers more often than email for anything important for some reason. Like we text all the time. I think that's just a very natural form of communication. The second thing I will mention is face-to-face versus online meetings. I've learned that kind of working with older generations, face-to-face works really well. They're just used to that format because it's what they grew up with versus, you know, I can communicate to someone in their 20s via talks, really simple, and it works out great, just as much as if I was to pick up the phone. And it's funny because I have older team members, and this is a joke where they would used to leave me voicemails, and you know, I'm on that cusp of some millennials. I was like, I don't check my voicemails. Like, stop leaving voicemails. Either, you know, send me a text or an email. But you got to think about voicemail was very, very common about 15 years ago. And now, like with the younger generation, I've never had any voicemail from anyone 30 and under to me. So that's like a key example between communication, both digital, phone, and in person.
Okay, so I have a follow up on that, and this is very specific. I spend more time with executives, Nina, teaching them how to delegate and create accountability. If there's an important task that has to be done, how do we effectively follow up with the progress of the task? You know, in the project management world, there are some agile organizations that have scrums and you know, they're short, you know, they use scrums and they have short sprints and then they have a return and report mechanism. And those are usually done in person, even, you know, stand up in person. There was an article written about 50 years ago. Yeah, it's the number two most downloaded Harvard Business Review article of all time, called Time Management, Who's Got the Monkey, by William Onken. And he partnered with Ken Blanchard, another old dude. You know, the 1 minute manager meets the monkey. And the whole idea of this methodology is what they call monkey management. Monkeys are important tasks. Now, I know people get triggered by words. Monkey is only an important task. So let's say there's a conversation that happens between you and your direct report, and an assignment, an important task, gets created and given to somebody. Those older thought leaders suggest that there's always one person to do the work of the important task and one person to supervise, and that there are what we call feeding sessions, and those should be done face to face, one on one. And or you can have, you know, team accountability meetings, but they need to be done in person for a couple of reasons. Too many managers are taking upward delegation. They're actually taking on assignments from their direct reports. And an email can quickly pass on or potentially even a text. Hey, Nina, I need you to, you know, I'm stuck with something. Could you check on this with so-and-so? It's like they have now given you a task that you can't say, no, I need you to do that. And so my question, and this is a sincere question, is if you are managing your direct reports through text or email, how do you prevent your direct reports from actually giving you assignments when that's not really appropriate? Because if they ask you for something, they can't move forward until you get back to them, and you've got your own important tasks that you're doing.
Yeah.
Am I clear with my question?
I'll try to answer and tell me if I don't answer it. I think one, every situation, you've got to determine what's the best communication method, first of all. I think if there is an email task, I mean, a task that has to go out via text, I think you just have to be clear on who's doing what. So if it's Joe, you've got this task, it's due this day, and I need you to do X, Y, Z, I'll check back in with you this. If you need to connect with it, let's talk on the phone, because I think texts are good for short, quick direction. But if it requires a conversation, I think that's when you say, let's hop on a phone call.
Minimum of a phone. If you've got a remote team, a phone is fine. That's a face-to-face conversation, in my opinion. But it's not an email or a text or some other, or even a voice message. Hey, Nina, would you do this? And it's like they're assigning you something that you can't reject in that moment.
Agree. That's why I think, you know, it's each situation that's unique for it. So I always feel like if it requires an actual conversation back and forth, do the phone call. If it's something that is very standard or, you know, something that doesn't require a conversation, a text works fine.
Okay. So you agree with the old dude, William Unk, and he'd be so proud.
Well, I'll have to check out this Harvard Business Review article.
Yeah, I'll send it to you if you're interested.
Well, as you mentioned, Spencer, one of our viewers, Laura, she got back to us, right? She gave us a little bit more context. And if I understand correctly, basically the situation is like this, particularly in blue collar fields. So I'm paraphrasing what Laura wrote here. Young person gets hired into a job, wants to receive a promotion. But one of the motivations of that is to not have to work with the old folks, right? So, And I think, again, you know, some of this comes back to, and I think particularly in blue collar, I just look back at my own experience working for my grandfather. So my grandfather was a carpenter and a house painter by trade, you know, so that's what he did. And he would take me on jobs. And for a long time, it was just hold this, hand me that. Put that over there, you know, the
task micromanagement.
So yeah, I did not feel like it. And I don't blame him because I was like 14, 15 years old. I mean, who am I, you know? So, and he didn't trust me to do certain things. And so it was,
and that's the key.
It was more dictatorial, and this is how we do it. And we do it my way. This is the way it's done. And as a young person, you just resent that naturally. I mean, you just have this rebellious inclination to say, well, you know, the work that I'm doing is boring and he doesn't want me to contribute. Like he doesn't trust me, so on and so forth. And so there can be some natural antagonism, I think, between generations, kind of alluding to what I was talking about earlier, where you got the old folks saying, well, this is how it's done. And we've done it like this for years and years and years. And you got the new people coming in saying, well, maybe we can do it a different way. And there's a bit of a clash there. But I want to come to you, Nina, back to your point about different life stages and what you saw, and also how this could impact generations. Because for a lot of boomers, when they grew up and went to school, Their parents weren't taking them to school. They were walking to school or they were taking the bus to school. Parents weren't dropping them off. They may not have had daycare because mom was stay at home. Their formative years were very different, which is why when they started in the workforce, coming in at 8 o'clock in the morning was fine. And it didn't cause any family disruptions because school was over there and I never had to worry about taking my kids to school. Whereas you're like, well, I'm a mom, I got three kids and I got to pack all this stuff up and I got to get them to school and I got to drive them all over here and there and the other. And for them growing up, they didn't have to do that because they didn't drive their kids to school. I mean, as a kid, I would be embarrassed if my parents took me to school. I did not want my parents.
You are such a geezer.
I didn't want them showing up in the old, I'm climbing out of this old Chrysler Cordoba with
Woody, Woody.
Like, I don't want my friends to see me, getting out of a car that my parents, so I wanted to go to school on my own. So I'm curious, how that plays into how different generations feel about each other because they grew up in very different times. And it's hard to compare it, I grew up as a kid in the 70s walking to school with my tuba, was very different than my children's experience getting driven to school every day.
You had to carry a freaking tuba?
Well, with a baritone, but yeah, like a small tuba.
That's resilience, Christian. I mean, to carry that, I mean, it's like a – that's like,
yeah, and there's no uphill both ways.
Right! I had to carry a tuba.
In the snow. Okay. So you sound exactly what, a baby would say to me. No, that's true. I think the experiences are different. And I'll go back to reference. It's just about respecting personal time, however that looks like, whether it's with your family or, I manage someone that did not have any kids, not married, but I remember, she told me that my personal time is just as important to me as your time with your family. Like, she's like, I've got exercise classes, I've got commitment with friends, and she had really laid it out very strongly and confidently, and I said, you're absolutely right. So that's why I want to change the discussion to really about respecting personal time, and whatever that is, whether it's family commitments, your personal life, personal commitments, and how it is, because everybody is different. I think, if you look at me and what I do with my kids, it's right. It's absolutely different than when I was a kid. I actually did walk to school every day. There was no parents dropping me off, but I was probably doing one activity versus now I could probably tell you 5 out of the 7 days our kids are in activities, so there's all those different commitments that we manage.
So to your point of respecting people differently, we have Stacy Barra who has another comment I think is really good. And she's just talking about, if I'm working later on the weekend, I set the delivery delays so no one feels obligated to respond from internal teammates. Because, there's a lot of pressure. In some cultures, it's expected that you are working 24/7, that you've got leaders that are sending out texts or emails at 3 a.m. And if you're not responding, there's come on, we're in a hustle and moving and shaking in environment. So that creates a lot of expectation that creates a tremendous amount of anxiety. And I think that's something that the younger generations do not tolerate. Another comment from one of your fans, Nina.
Yeah, spot on. Hannah, I think I'll kind of reference Stacy's thing really quickly. I think that's a great tip on Outlook. You can set the default. I picked that up a couple years ago as well, just because I got called out on, I naturally a late night, late owl. I stay up late after the kids go to bed, kind of knocking out emails. And I realized people were getting a little bit panicky when I'd be sending emails late. So I use that Outlook delay on, which I think is really key. And those are some of the tips. I would also say, as any leader, when they come join a new team, is to lay out expectations of how you work, your work style, and understanding what your team's work style is, because everybody is really different. So I remember the last group that I managed on the very first day when I introduced myself, I was just like, hey, I don't want any meetings before 8:30. I will not be able to make it, and we're not going to have any meetings past 4. like at least within our team, let's establish that as a criteria. And I think it's important to lay out expectations both for yourself and what your team members need as well, because they have their own commitments.
100% agree. And it's easier done early on in the relationship than later. Yeah. So that you don't create, because in the absence of information, people make assumptions, and it's usually the wrong one. I do want to just continue on that theme of communication with maybe a different focus. So when it comes to communication, this is really a leadership tip. How do you give feedback to the different generations? Because there's going to be times when, you know, I talked about, you know, delegation, somebody falls, doesn't follow through or complete an assignment as needed. And you need to have a discussion with them about performance. How do you handle that feedback with those different generations?
That is good. I'm probably not going to even answer this correctly. So this is just my perspective, but I tend to be a very honest communicator when I give feedback, because I think for me, you can only grow and learn when you receive that honest feedback of what you can do to improve. Once you really lay out that honesty, it's a matter of how you deliver that message. So I think some people, I forgot if this method is called like the sandwich method, where you start it with something positive like, hey, great, you know, I know you worked really hard on that project. I appreciate all the hours you put on there. But could you think next time you could improve on XYZ? So when you take on the next project, then you close with, you know, ending on a positive note. I feel like that sandwich method of positive, then communication of feedback for improvement and closing with a positive works really well in general, but especially with the younger generation, because they want to know you're ending the note on a positive. For older generation, you can be a little bit more direct. You know, it's, you know, I think this is what you need to improve on a project or a skill set, and here's why, and here's how I can help you. And they'll, you know, take that. You don't need to always sugarcoat it as often, I feel like.
So I'm going to ask for your feedback here, because can I share with you how I deal with that?
Yes, yes.
Okay. I do believe that all the generations have their own answers and have their own ideas. And I believe fundamentally that people are whole and capable. You know, when you're 14, Christian, it's a little bit different, because there's levels of managing people, right? There is micromanagement when people first start, because there is no trust. And a little less micromanagement is, you know, go do that and then return and report. He had to tell you everything to do. And then even less micromanagement is, you know, go do and report to me once a week. And ultimately, where we want to get with our people is just keep me informed. And that's where there's a huge level of trust, because we know people are going to be like you, Nina, and a self-starter. And those are the people that we make our leaders. But if you're developing those on your team, that's what we want. And so my perspective is, I want to create leaders on my team. I want people to think critically. So if I'm always giving them the answers to their problems, I'm training them to be dependent on me. So if there is a problem or a behavior, Christian, you're the one who screwed up, so I'm going to talk to you. Hey, Christian, you know, I called you into my office today to talk to you about the fact that this is going to be completely banal and inane. In the last month, you know, Christian's a supervisor. In the last month, you've been late 6 times. You didn't get in by 8 o'clock as the expectation was. And as a result, you're setting an example for the rest of your team that it's okay to show up whenever they want. So, first of all, do you acknowledge that you've been late the last, you know, 6 times in the last month?
I disagree. I have not been late. I don't know what you're talking about. I come here on time. And why don't you talk about the 13 times that I showed up early, Spencer? I mean, are you only
I appreciate those 13 times that you were here on time.
Why don't you tell me about all the times where I'm, you know, going above and beyond, and you never say anything about that?
I'm a good manager, so I did anyway. But anyway, so here's the time card. Nothing personal. Here are the times that you were late. Is that right, Christian?
Well, I mean, that's what the system says. I guess.
And you're right. You do a lot of things, and the impact of you not being here is X. So my question is to you: what's going on? What's happening? Why is that happening? Because this is not like you. You're a great leader here, and your team really looks to you for an example. So what happens is instead of me going into solution right away, let's figure out what's going on. You know what's going on? He has a car problem, and so he can't get his kids to school on time.
I love that you ask, like, what is happening?
Don't go into solution mode right away. Just ask, what's going on? You know, I am so sorry that's happening. And what I'd like to know is, just because of the importance for you to be here on time to set that example for your team, how are you going to handle this? How do you recommend that that you solve the problem? And I do not give them, because it's not coaching if I tell them what to do. Again, that's, if I give you the solution and it doesn't work, there's no ownership there. And the kids today want to take ownership. They want to know that they matter. So I'm giving it to you and you're like, well, you know, I'll just try harder. I appreciate that. And is there something you can do specifically? And he says, you know what? My car is not going to be fixed for like 2 weeks. Is it possible that I change my starting time temporarily from 9 to 6 instead of from 8 to 5? And I said, sure, that works. How are you going to handle that with your team? So you clearly set the expectations with them. I'm not telling him, but I'm leading him in that direction of what he needs to do. And that way, I think it doesn't matter what age, because it's their approach. I mean, I'd love your feedback on that.
No, I think that is spot on, actually. I'm bummed I did not say that, but you're right. I think you're showing empathy because you're asking them, like,
what's happening? What's going on?
And then two, by giving them options for the solution, then it also helps build accountability too, right? I told my boss that, you know what, I'm going to tweak my schedule and come in 30 minutes later and start 30 minutes later. I love that. I think you have to always ask foundationally, like, what's happening here before just addressing, giving them the solution.
But that conversation, Nina, takes time, which is what people need today. And too many of leaders, I believe, are so busy being efficient that they're not being effective. We need to be able to slow down and have those conversations that let people know that you're important. And of course, like I said, it was a banal example, Christian. You'd never be late.
Yeah. Well, and sorry for turning on my rebellious
switch totally here in my brain. It's completely plausible
to push back, because in real life, I would never talk that way to pretty much anybody. But you know, we're just acting here. Nina, I want to come back to a couple of things that you propose that we touch on in our conversation. One is, you mentioned that you'd watched the episode that we did with Tavia Sharp and on image and generational thinking about image. And then another one was interviews and how interviews differ between the generations. So maybe you can kind of tell us a little bit more about those particular aspects of multi-generational teams.
Yep. I'll mention Tavia's first because I thought this was really insightful. She talked about image was, and I wrote this down, it was A, B, C, D, which was essentially appearance, behavior, communication, and your digital presence. And that's what makes up your image. And as I thought through this multi-generational piece of it, it is so true how different each of those aspects. You know, we talk about something as basic as appearance. You know, before, you think about the work styles was very professional, more formal, like men came in button-down shirts, tie suits, to now we have offices that are business casual jean Fridays, or some that is far casual every day. I worked in an environment where it was jeans and flip-flops, and me coming in, I was still unsure because I had never started the workforce in a casual environment. So I was still wearing blouses with jeans while you had Gen Zs literally wearing t-shirts and shorts and flip-flops to work. So appearance is one important thing. Second, behavior. We talked a lot about this, I think, in general, whether it's formal, informal, how we interact, the loyalty and motivations. The third is communication. We spent a lot of time just talking about text, email, face-to-face, how do people socialize and post. And digital, I think digital is really important because think about even something as, we'll talk about something general that we're familiar with, LinkedIn, right? LinkedIn. Then I don't even know when it existed, but I remember when I first started, I didn't really have a LinkedIn profile, but now it's really prevalent. In addition to that, you have a lot of other just social media platforms that people are posting on, but also companies are posting on. I would tell you that almost every interview that I've done for the younger generation, people will ask, what is the company's like Instagram or digital presence? They'll kind of watch it if something major happens in the news, right? What's the company stance? I think digital has such a profound impact on both a company's image as well as your personal image that differs from, you know, different generations. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Christian.
Oh, I was just going to say, I just looked at the clock and I cannot believe that we've gone almost 50 minutes. But this conversation has been super informative and enlightening for me. And I will take the principles I've learned here and I will incorporate them into my own work.
Uh-oh.
I think we lost Christian for a little bit.
Oh, because I hit the mute button because my phone was ringing in the background and I forgot to unmute it. Speaking of old generation, I'm one of the few people that still has a landline.
I don't have a landline. I'm older than you and I don't have a landline.
How can you put your landline on your resume?
No, landline not on the resume, but I still have a landline. I just have an emotional attachment to our phone number for some reason. I don't know. I don't want to give it up. But I was just saying that this has been a fascinating conversation. I've really enjoyed this time. And maybe before we adjourn, if you've got some closing thoughts, you know, to kind of put a bow on this multi-generational conversation, what would those closing thoughts be, Nina?
I would say, I think working across multi-generation should be viewed as a positive, a competitive advantage. I think what you can learn if you're open, yourself, your company, your culture creates that openness and harness, you will learn so much more than working with just the exact same peer group. Trust me, I'm managing teams and being part of teams that are multi-generation. I've experienced, learned a lot more than I could have just than working with the same age group.
I mean, I think that is so, so right. And I'm not going to let her finish with the tie up just quite yet. So what do you predict in the future? I mean, what things could we look for? Are there going to be any new dynamics? You're talking about right now, we have more generations than ever. What do you see potentially coming? And what do we need to be ready for as leaders? And just to close that gap of, you know, as you talk about that preparation gap or readiness gap.
I think the workplace of the younger generation is going to involve more digitally because I see that happening now. Like, you know, we talked about email and text, but now a lot of the email platforms just have like Microsoft chat. So like that middle version. So I think you're going to see more and more digital platforms of communication than face-to-face. I think as we go into more hybrid is now permanent. I don't think remote is going to be forever, but I think hybrid will be like kind of the new norm. So the engagement of how people interact both video as well as offline. And lastly is just, I think every generation will continue to grow, meaning today's Gen Z is going to, you know, they probably know it all. And then as they age 20 years, it's going to be a whole nother slew of uniqueness that I probably won't be able to predict because I'm always amazed at every decade how much more the workforce has evolved.
Do you believe in that commercial? Is it progressive? This is, you know, children becoming their parents?
You know, I would say no, but I probably am turning into my parents.
The kids all turn into their parents eventually, and then the same problems keep persisting. So it just goes.
All right. Well, again, this has been a fascinating conversation. Nina, I am so grateful that you took time to join us today. Listeners and viewers, also, thank you so much for participating in the conversation. Really added a lot. But Nina, if people who are listening or viewing this podcast, if they want to learn more about you, the way that you lead, mentor teams, if they want to connect with you to learn more about your multi-generational approach to team building, what's the best way for them to reach out and contact you?
Yes, please follow me on LinkedIn. I'm very active, Nina Johnson. I'm pretty active in my posts. I post weekly and I'm always open to connections and making new acquaintances and friends that way.
We're new connections.
Yes, we are.
Yes, and Spencer, you've spent decades helping organizations around the world
develop
high-performing teams. Yeah. Okay, Boomer.
Yeah,
exactly. If people want to connect to the Boomer on the cusp How do they reach out and connect with you?
I'll tell you how you do it. Today, you come to Red Iguana 2 and have lunch with Christian and Patrick and me. Come up to us and say hi. I'm the bald guy you see here. So come see us at Red Iguana. We're headed there right now after this, right?
That's right. Nina, that's our favorite Mexican restaurant.
We've been going there for 20 years to Red Iguana. It's incredible Mexican food. So if you're not there at Red Iguana at 11:30 or noon, then reach out to me on LinkedIn. That's the best way. And Christian, if people can't find you at Red Iguana today, where else can they find you?
Well, let's make it 3 cheers for LinkedIn today. Yeah, just look me up on LinkedIn. Happy to connect with anyone. Listeners, viewers, again, thank you so much for participating. Like and subscribe to our podcast, and we'll catch you again soon. And Nina, thank you for joining us. We'll see you.